Live Creative Now, episode 78.
Welcome to Live Creative Now with Melissa Dinwiddie, a weekly podcast to inspire you to create your art and share your work, because that's how you will change the world.
Hello, hello. I am Melissa Dinwiddie, passion pluralite artist, happiness catalyst, and creativity instigator, here to address all your questions about living a full-color creative life. Whether you think of yourself as not artistic, not creative, as I did for way too many years, or you think of yourself as an artist of any kind, visual, written, music, anything, or anything in between, no matter how you define yourself, feeding your creative hungers makes you feel more alive, and it's how you change the world. My last episode, episode 77, was a transparent look inside the sometimes painful process of publishing a book, which I am in the middle of doing right now, and that episode talked a lot about why I went back to the drawing board on the cover design after I had sent a poll out to my audience to vote on their favorite cover. Yes, I did that. And in fact, I just sent a second poll out yesterday, if you're listening to this on Wednesday, the day the podcast goes live, with brand new cover designs. And I talk about why I did that in that last episode. I also talked about something that used to terrify me, which is getting on stage in front of hundreds of people, or in front of any number of people, actually, and how that has changed. That is something that if you have a fear of getting on stage, just getting up in front of people, listen to that episode, because I think it will really help you. That episode was right after Rosh Hashanah, which took place last week. Rosh Hashanah is the Jewish New Year, and I lead services on Rosh Hashanah morning. And if you're listening to this podcast on the day it goes live on Wednesday, October 12th, it's Yom Kippur, which is the Jewish Day of Atonement. The two holidays together, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, are referred to collectively as the High Holy Days. And Yom Kippur is the holiest day on the Jewish calendar, and I am leading services again, if you're listening to this on Wednesday. But of course, I'm recording this before Yom Kippur. Monday was October 10th. And when I woke up on Monday morning and realized it was October 10th, it brought up for me a couple of points that might seem unrelated, but I knew that I had to take time away from working on my book, which publishes on November 15th. I have so much work to do still, but I knew I had to take time away from working on my book to share these points with you. October 10th, 2010, 10, 10, 10 is the shortened version of the date. That date 6 years ago probably means nothing to you, but for me, it is a day that will live in infamy. That was the day when I was supposed to go exhibit my art at a street festival, and I was all ready to go. I just had a great night's sleep. I was feeling good and excited about it. And I stepped out of the shower and wham, I slipped and dislocated my knee. And that scored me an ambulance ride to the emergency room. And obviously, I didn't exhibit any art at a street festival. It was pretty awful. And then, 4 days later, my cat died. Turns out he chewed through an extension cord. It took us a day to figure that out. We couldn't figure out what had happened. And then my then boyfriend, now husband, discovered an extension cord with tooth marks in it. This cat, whose name was Lewis, loved chewing things. He was kind of like a dog in that way. So, you know, at least he went quick and he went doing something he loved. But it was pretty much the worst week ever. But going through that very crappy week and its very crappy aftermath, which included major surgery and months of very painful recuperation, led to some very great things. That makes me think about this Chinese proverb, which you may have heard before, about a farmer and his son. They had a beloved stallion who helped them till the fields. And one day the horse ran away and they were dependent on this horse for their livelihood. So their neighbors in the surrounding village said, "Oh my gosh, what bad luck." And the farmer replied, "Good luck, bad luck, who knows?" And then a few days later, the horse came back leading this beautiful white mare who followed it. And when the neighbors found out, they cried, "Oh my gosh, not only has your horse returned, but now you have a second horse. What good luck." And the farmer replied, "Good luck, bad luck, who knows?" Then later that same week, the farmer's son was riding the white mare and she threw him to the ground and he broke his leg very badly, really, really badly. And the neighbor said, "Oh my gosh, your son is crippled. What bad luck." And the farmer replied, "Good luck, bad luck, who knows?" Now, shortly after this, soldiers from the National Army marched through the village and they drafted all able-bodied young men and boys, but they did not take the farmer's son because he had a broken leg. And the neighbor said, "Your son was spared. Good luck. What good luck that was." And of course, you can guess what the farmer said. So my week from hell was a lot like that. My knee injury, which was very major, the loss of my cat, having to have major surgery and spend many months in recuperation, that was all very bad luck. But those same things were also what made me finally realize that the man that I had been seeing and whom I had kicked to the curb twice, I might add, those bad things made me realize that this man was not only a keeper, he was my keeper. I knew he was a great guy. I just wasn't sure if he was my great guy. Because this guy, MM, who I refer to him as MM, otherwise known as my husband now, when those things, bad things happened, he just moved in closer. And he made it clear to me through his actions that I could count on him and he would be there for me when times got rough. So here's a little peek into my dating history. I had been so focused on finding the kind of guy that I'm most drawn to, that I'm most naturally attracted to. That kind of guy is like really out there. He's taking action kind of guy. He's a mover and shaker, making change in the world, which is nothing like what my husband is like. And I'd been so focused on finding that kind of guy that I hadn't been paying attention to what was really good for me. I was so busy looking for what I thought I wanted that I was overlooking what I needed. And what I'd really been looking for, somebody pointed out to that this out to me recently, I had been looking for the male version of who I wanted to be, not somebody who would make the best teammate for a team that included me. There's a big difference between those two things. And really, two of me, that would not make a good team. We would constantly be butting heads. We would be competing with each other. We would be competing to be better. We would be competing for the spotlight and attention. We would be competing for our thing, whatever it might be, to be the focus. And of course, we would have all the same weaknesses and all the same strengths. We wouldn't be like building on each other's, you know, weaknesses and strengths. And in fact, I had been in that relationship many times before, my first marriage, and more than one of my long-term relationships that followed that marriage, though they were with all with men who competed with me. I didn't really see that until I was with MM. I mean, no wonder it didn't work out, being with somebody who competes with you rather than supports you. And it goes both ways. I am so much better able to support MM than I'll just call him Miracle Man, which I'll share with you why he's called that. I am so much better able to be a good partner, a supportive partner for Miracle Man and make his life go better than I ever was in any previous relationship. So this guy, by the way, who I now refer to as Miracle Man, who I originally referred to as Shy Guy because he was incredibly shy. And then later on, when he came back into my life as a really healing balm after another relationship ended, I referred to him as Medicine Man. This guy not only didn't compete with me, but it seemed to make him just inordinately happy to help me shine. And it makes me inordinately happy to help him shine. And even before he took on the role of the emergency room supporter on the day of the knee dislocation, when, this is a little aside, they were, after taking x-rays and waiting around for hours with my kneecap on the side of my leg, they were finally going to pop the kneecap back in. I had dislocated my knee before when I was 14, and I knew how painful, I remembered how painful that was, and I was really scared. And Miracle Man said, "You can bite my hand. Just bite my hand." Which, of course, was like the stupidest thing ever. Made me laugh. And I was like, "You're stupid. You're crazy. Like, I'm not going to bite your hand. Then we'd both be injured, you know?" But it made me laugh, which, of course, was his goal. Anyway, even before he did that in the emergency room, and even before he played rehab nurse after the surgery, I was already realizing that this man, this real human being, you know, he wasn't the person that I thought I was looking for, but he was a real human being who made my life go better. And that is why he wasn't just a medicine man. That is why he was Miracle Man. That's why I call him MM on my blog. And it's very embarrassing to admit this, but I broke it off with him twice because he was boring. We've talked about this many times. He laughs about it. He is the least boring person I've ever met, but I thought he was boring because he was so shy. Anyway, I tried to find a girlfriend to set him up with because I knew he was such a great guy. What was I thinking? Anyway, to be fair, you might be thinking, "My God, Melissa, what a complete idiot you are." It wasn't actually that I was a complete idiot. He didn't show very much of himself to me. It took him a really long time. He was so shy and so quiet around me that trying to carry on a conversation over dinner was like trying to drag a wet queen-sized mattress up a hill by myself. It took a very long time for him to open up so that I could actually see who he was. And what little I saw of him at first, when we were first dating, honestly, it felt like a deal breaker. Not because he was mean or a bad person or anything like that, but here's one example. He has this really goofy 10-year-old boy sense of humor. And I am attracted to dry wit, you know, quick-wittedness. But he's more into like puns and fart jokes. There was just no way that I could imagine myself being with that for the rest of my life. It was a deal breaker. But you know what? His goofy humor, it started to grow on me. It started to really infect me and loosen me up. And his goofiness, which I at first thought was a deal breaker, helped me to allow myself to be goofy, which is something that I basically had kept off limits since adolescence. Because, you know, girls are supposed to be beautiful. not clownish. And oh my God, I bought right into that sexist message. My goal was always to play, you know, the princess or the queen, not the jester. I didn't want to be the clown. But thanks to Miracle Man, I have rediscovered my goofy side, my clownish side. And let me tell you, allowing yourself to be goofy is a hell of a lot more fun than always trying to be that beautiful, perfect princess. Guess what? It's not fun trying to be perfect. There's so much more room in the clown role than in the role of the ingenue or even of the femme fatale. So in other words, my husband, Miracle Man, has helped me to allow myself to be imperfect. And yes, it took me a long time to appreciate that what I needed was not the male version of who I wanted to be, but the best teammate for a team that included me. So this reminds me of many years ago when a woman I was close friends with at the time, when she met her boyfriend, and he was a singer-songwriter. He played guitar and he wrote songs and they were beautiful. And one time I was at a little small party at her apartment and he pulled out his guitar and he serenaded her. He serenaded all of us. Oh my God. Wow. I wanted a boyfriend who would write original songs and serenade me like that. How romantic. And in fact, not long after that, I actually did end up dating a guy who was a very skilled guitar player, though he wasn't a singer-songwriter. And he got me to start playing guitar myself. And some years later, after that relationship was over, I dated another musician who, in fact, wrote songs for me to sing. He would sing them to me to teach them to me, and then he wanted me to sing them. And these two relationships played a really big part in my becoming a musician myself. And ultimately, long after both of these men were out of the picture, what I realized was that at that party, in that apartment, maybe what I was longing for was not a musician boyfriend so much as to reclaim my musician self. Because way back at age 15, I had decided that I sucked at music, that other people were the musicians, not me. So instead of pursuing music for myself, in that realm, I became what Julia Cameron refers to in The Artist's Way as a shadow artist, longing for a partner to fill that music-shaped hole in my life. So here's what Cameron writes. She writes, shadow artists are gravitating to their rightful tribe, but cannot yet claim their birthright. Very often, audacity, not talent, makes one person an artist and another a shadow artist, hiding in the shadows, afraid to step out and expose the dream to the light, fearful that it will disintegrate to the touch. That was me. That was me with art, visual art, before I came back to visual art. I quit at age 13, didn't come back until age 28. That was me in my early 30s, coming back to music. Because I don't need a boyfriend or a husband to fill the music-shaped hole. I get to do it myself. And here's the important thing. You get to do it yourself too, because you don't have to be a brilliant musician. You don't have to be a professional musician. You don't have to be assigned with a label musician to be a musician and substitute whatever kind of creative pursuit you're longing for musician. You don't have to be brilliant at it. You get to do it yourself. And owning that is what allowed me to step fully into the identity of musician. Owning that for visual art is what allowed me to step fully into the identity of visual artist. Owning that as an improviser. I perform as an improviser. I am so amateur, so not the level of my heroes. I am like not even close. I'm never going to be as good as they are. I still get to own that and step fully into that identity. And no, I don't make my living from my music. Not even close. I don't make my living from my art anymore. I do make some income from it still from my Ketubah site. Periodically, people buy my paintings. That is not how I make my living. I don't write songs very often. And sometimes I go for weeks without even making any music at all, without even picking up my ukulele. But I still get to own that I am a musician because I love making music. It's something I do, and it's who I am. And of course, it's the same for you. If you want to make music or write a book or make enough paintings to fill an exhibit space or anything else, you get to do it. You get to claim that birthright, even if you suck at it, because it is not about if you're good or bad at it. It is about this thing is what you were put on the planet to do. You put on the planet to express yourself creatively. It is how you change the world, baby. And if you want some specifics about how to claim your birthright, along with the why it's world-changing, why it's essential, make sure to grab a copy of my book, The Creative Sandbox Way, when it comes out on November 15th. And if you haven't signed up yet on my advance notice list, go to creativesandboxway.com and make sure to sign yourself up. There will be lots of bonuses during launch week, so you don't want to miss that. CreativeSandboxWay.com. So, to sum this rambly essay up, and I have to a little tangent here. That reminds me of my first year in college when I wrote an essay in the style of Montaigne. And I remember I literally composed the last few paragraphs on my electric typewriter. This is before computers, before running to campus to hand it in just barely on time because I had put it off to the last minute. And I got an A on that essay. And I swear to God, the only reason I got an A, could have possibly gotten an A on that essay, is because the style of Montaigne was pretty rambly. So anyway, that was my little tangent. So to sum up this rambly essay, I have to say that it really helps a lot to have people in your life who can champion you. And Miracle Man does this for me. Yeah, he drives me crazy too, because anybody we love in our lives that we spend a lot of time with, of course, they're going to drive you crazy. Don't think that we have the perfect relationship, but we do have a relationship where we champion each other. And not once has he complained about my being hyper-focused on getting my book done. Instead, he pitches in to make sure that both of our lives run as smoothly as possible. And I do the same whenever the roles are reversed. So we really work as a team. And I want you to keep your eyes open for all the potential champions in your life who can truly champion you and your living that full-color creative life that you want. And when you find them, treat them really well and keep them close. And meanwhile, pay attention to how the bad luck episodes, those crappy days where you dislocate your knee, those crappy weeks where your cat dies, pay attention to how those bad things can often lead to really good things. And pay attention also to where you might be playing the shadow artist role instead of stepping into that birthright yourself. I know there's a lot of points for one podcast episode. I am now going to go back to scanning artwork and laying out my book. That's it. That's a wrap. Thank you so much for joining me today. If you're getting value out of this podcast, as always, the best way to thank me is to tell your friends. And hop on over to iTunes, leave a rating and review. If you need step-by-step instructions, you can find them at livecreativenow.com/iTunes-review. livecreativenow.com/iTunes-review. Until next time, thanks again for joining me, and go get creating.
Live creative now.
Subscribe at livecreativenow.com.